The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Kostaki Economopoulos with All Pro Lines, the podcast. Appreciate you being here. I'm a little discombobulated. Kind of goofed around and worked on things too long and wasn't quite ready. And then when I sat down, the mic wasn't here and I had the thing and I had the wrong audio and I called my guest by the wrong name. I'm a little discombobulated, but I'm very excited to talk to Wayne Fetterman here in just a minute or two, a few minutes. Man, he's an amazing guest. I went to the IMBD and it was just a ridiculous list of things. So many cool things that I was like, oh, I want to ask about this and I want to ask about that. The prep was easy, but it hurt my feelings a little bit that he has such an amazing list of things. Anyway, we'll get to Wayne in just a sec. Welcome in. It's been a great summer. I have really enjoyed a summer of following along with some of the football news and taking some time away from football and traveling with family and doing some cool stuff with my mom and the kids and running around, and life's been good. So it's nice to reconnect with you guys. I'm glad you're here. Let's do a few housekeeping things and we'll jump into some jokes. I'm on the road here soon. I haven't been on the road much this summer. It's been probably my lightest non-COVID summer ever. So I'm itchy to get back out there. Coming up soon, Boise, Twin Falls, Ferdinand, Indiana, Belterra. I'm doing the big Ron Sexton Memorial Benefit Show for charity. Some great comics on that lineup. That's in Southern Indiana. If you can get there, do it. It's a hell of a lineup. I'm doing Shelbyville. I'm doing Kokomo, Farmington, Janesville, a bunch of other Wisconsin towns coming up. Putting together some stuff in Michigan. I'm doing Louisville and Niles, Michigan. The one thing I want to try to pitch to you today, the one thing I'm trying to sell to you is annually, we do a lot of dumb things at All Pro Lines, but the one thing that we do that's good, that's thoughtful, that's useful for the community, we do a confidence pool. It's a pick'em league, NFL pick'em, all the regular season games, but it's not against the spread. Against the spread is like a coin flip. We do a confidence pool where you put the level of confidence next to each game between 1 and 17. It's great. It makes the game so much more interesting to watch. Highly recommend you playing in a confidence pool if you've never done it. And we'll have weekly and season-long prizes and lots of cool people playing it, including legend Bob Kavoyan, who you know and love. Just texted with Bob a couple weeks ago, and he's in good shape and excited about being in the confidence pool. And it's what we ask is that you donate to the V Foundation. The V Foundation, if you don't know, is a I should have practiced this too. The V Foundation is a great organization that has underwriters. They're all about cutting-edge cancer research. The underwriters. The endowments is a better word. They have endowments that cover their operating costs. So every penny that you donate goes directly to cutting edge cancer research. Cancer affects all of us. My brother is a cancer survivor, and only because of some cutting edge cancer research. He got a bone marrow transplant and it saved his life. It's a cool story. And he's around because smart, interesting, innovative people have been working on things for a long time. So it's close to my heart. Everyone's touched by cancer. Maybe jump in there, make a donation. Don't play in the pool. If you're not a football nerd, you don't want to play in a pool, do that. It's still a good cause. Donate $5, donate $100, whatever you can do. There's a link on all the social media platforms of All Pro Lines. Jump in there and join us. All right, let's do a few jokes.
The 2-minute drill.
All right, I'm settling in now. I was just got rushed. You know, it shouldn't be rushed with comedy. Comedy should have a flow. It should be relaxed.
The 2 minute drill.
No. Don't do that. See, if I wasn't rushed, I would have turned off the thing that makes it repeat. Nobody cares. All right. Let's get to the big news of the week. Niners rookie first round wideout, Ricky Pearsall, was shot during an attempted robbery. He's out of the hospital. He's going to be okay. Impressive for a rookie willing to take a bullet for the team. He just got there. It looks like the thief wanted his Rolex. Do we still need a wrist device to tell time at this point in humanity? Does the Rolex tell you what year it is? That maybe you don't need a watch anymore? Does anyone not have a pocket computer with the time as the first thing that you see? I don't know if that's a guy with the gun. Does that count as cover two? It was what? What do they call this defense? The shoot and run? That the technical football term for this is the reverse Aaron Hernandez. The thieves also shot at Kadarius Toney, but his body refused to catch the bullet. Kadarius Toney, as you heard, I'm sure you heard, got released. I hope they mail unemployment checks and not throw them. Kadarius drop ball, Chiefs drop Kadarius. It's a flow chart. Even Gronk can understand. All right, 2024 season kicks off Thursday with lots of shots of Taylor Swift in the luxury box while the Chiefs and Ravens game will be played on the side. It's funny that Taylor's in a luxury box when she has the ultimate luxury box. Worth $1 billion, everybody. And once you get kicked out of it, she badmouths you forever. Then on Friday, the NFL plays its first game in Brazil, Packers-Eagles. I assume all the dudes will return with exaggerated tan lines and no pubes. Midseason, the Ravens will have an alternate. The Ravens will have an alternate purple helmet called Purple Rising. Really? That's what you named your, because purple-headed warrior of love was taken? Is that what happened? It's fantasy season. You got your fantasy football team names going? That's what Shahid said. Itty-bitty TD committee? Anyone? Baby back Gibbs? Pacheco yourself before you wreck yourself? For Miami fans, only Fins. Maybe that. Pits and Giggles? These are some of the ones I've seen out there. I'm a boy. Makes me giggle. The Broncos GM says Zach Wilson has all the tools to be a starter. Sure, grab your tools and start working on the drywall. We've seen Zach Wilson start just fine. It's the part after the starting, the beginning and then the middle and then the end. Those are the problem areas. That Cowboys signed Dalvin Cook to the practice squad. Wait, the Cowboys practice? Cowboys running back room now includes Dalvin Cook and Zeke Elliott. It's really more of a running back retirement home at this point. It makes sense that Jerry Jones would be an assisted living facility. But put it this way, if Dalvin and Zeke were women, they would be too old for Jerry to date. The Cowboys are just one little time machine away from a Super Bowl. There was a fire at the Cowboys training camp hotel. Hey, they're starting the season out hot. Am I right, everybody? It's probably the only time this year there'll be a story involving the words Cowboys and on fire. Tyreek Hill out there still making babies. You thought it was a sold out Dolphins game. No, it's just bring your kids to work day. A former NFL player was just arrested for urinating on another passenger during a flight. Even Antonio Brown couldn't believe it wasn't Antonio Brown. The guy who did the peeing, this is his real name, Goster Cherilus, which sounds more like a wizard from Hogwarts than an offensive tackle. The incident occurred on a flight from Boston to Dublin, which has to be the most likely flight for somebody to get peed on. The technical term for this is soggy Aaron Hernandez. All right, there's more jokes here, but we get the idea. My guest is here. He got here early. He's an incredible, he's a great comic, and I've known that for years, and I didn't know all of the cool things he's been doing otherwise until I did a little homework on the man. Let's bring him in here. Ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Fetterman.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
How do I sound?
You sound great, Wayne. Good to see you, buddy.
There we go. It's hat day here. Thank you for reading jokes with no emotional input at all to them. Just as flatlined as you could possibly do.
Really, you know what? I've never...
Do you even care about you? What's going on?
Yeah, it's prep. I did so much of the other parts of the thing to get ready for this.
Okay, obviously you're barely holding on in there. Obviously.
It's ridiculous how much I'm affected by being rushed as I was sitting down.
Yeah.
It threw off everything. It's good to see you, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. Last time we
saw each other was the Hollywood Improv. Is that right?
We did the Hollywood Improv. I forget exactly what the construct was.
It was a sports night.
It was comics doing sports jokes.
Yeah. I did more sports routines, but it was fun.
It was fun. I love that construct. I don't usually, especially in Hollywood and in LA and New York broadly, people don't like sports jokes too much.
What are you talking about?
Relatively speaking, I find as I travel around in the non-New York.
By the way, that schedule was incredible. That touring schedule. One town I've heard of. One town. No, I'm kidding. No, I actually, that sounds like a really fun tour to take.
It's because it's my media footprint is I'm like the Walmart of comedy. Bob and Tom market. So I'm a big deal at small towns.
I just have a question. Are each of those like a comedy club or are those like one nighter situations? What am I hearing here when you
it's
reel
the full
off those
range
cities?
Of things? A lot of them are self-produced shows that I put together with radio stations. So I'm doing a lot of band bars and small theaters and sometimes breweries. Breweries are nice, I find.
Now, when you do these self-produced, do you bring people with you or they bring local talent and then you headline it? Or is it just the DJ in town?
It varies wildly. Sometimes I'll drag a friend along. We'll do a few in a row. Sometimes I'll find some local guys to just do a few minutes and then
it's all by car. You all jump in the car and just go, right? I assume.
No, I am the low rent Brian Regan. Every 2 weeks I fly into a city and I rent a car and drive around for three or four nights.
Got it.
It's the same model at a much lower level.
You don't have to laugh about that. We all know it's lower. We know it's lower. You don't have to say it. But the only reason I ask is because I don't know if you know this. It's in if you did any research, I wrote a book called The History of Stand-Up, and I'm always curious how people navigate their world of stand-up. And there's so much what they call DIY, do it yourself, kind of promoting, booking, and it's really impressive, really impressive.
Well, my particular footprint has been driven almost completely by the Bob and Tom radio show.
Right.
And so I'm not sure I would have drawn it up that way if I was making a plan from the beginning. But they have been so great to me, and they've changed my life and my career arc. And so I wind up in Bob and Tom markets most of the time, and the folks are great. So I keep going back to those places. I've had you know, a handful of other credits that are somewhat useful, but 95% of my juice is from the one thing.
Yeah, here's the crazy thing. I've been trying to get on Bob and Tom. They're not interested in Wayne Fetterman.
You got to maybe go to the town.
Yeah, I think so.
You got to go to Indianapolis and be there. They have you on. Then they go, oh, we like this guy. Then they bring you back.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the tip. Guys, this is a podcast for eight people. This is who would care about how to get on Bob and Tom. But first of all, thank you for having me. Second of all, how many viewers are watching live right now? I'm just curious. Is it more than three?
It's going to be a tiny number because it's off season.
No, I'm just looking for a number.
I didn't promote it.
Thank you.
I didn't promote the video perspective. Yeah. but it's mostly consumed on audio. We'll get lots of people listening on audio.
I'd love that you want to answer my question, but
I'm looking for the answer right now. I'm looking. We got Jerry Oliver says hi, Ron Milford, Ewan Mead, Maureen, Ryan, Glenn Grizzard, Ron.
There's a bunch more people than I expected. Thanks, guys. Ryan, thanks, guys. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, guys, for tuning in.
Appreciate you being here. I'm settling it. Can I give your credits list and dive
into some questions here? Let's do it.
I couldn't do it. It's ridiculous. It's an impressive. See, I thought of you as sort of a like a David Feldman, Jack Cohen-ish type, which is like mostly driven by the writing part of the arc of the story. And you have so many more aspects to your career that I didn't even know about. It's great. Most people probably know you if they're recognizing you from Curb. Is that a fair assessment?
That is absolutely. That's where I get most, as they like to call in the business, hits. A hit, I call it, is when somebody in the world recognizes you.
I love it.
Bar. Yeah. Got to get a hit. It's not of you. It's not like social media. In the real world.
You produced the recent amazing George Carlin's American Dream documentary. Really great stuff, man. I also love the Gary Shandling one, which you worked on.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the Rickles one, but I can't wait to see that. Head monologue writer for a while with Jimmy Fallon.
Yep.
And you mentioned it. This is one I have many questions about. The history of stand-up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle. That's a book.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a book. If you're interested in that, if some people call it an art form, some people call it a craft. What do you think, Istagi? Art form, craft, combination.
It's funny you say craft.
Business.
I've always leaned on the word craft because it seems less pretentious, but it's definitely somewhere between those two. Yeah. Okay. Where do you land on that?
I don't know. I just report. I don't really have an opinion on it. I just report.
Now, okay, reporting. So you that is a hell of a title. You wrote a book. You did a lot of homework. What surprised you the most
This is what surprised me the most was that I guess it. Yeah, this was the big moment for me was, even though technology, obviously we're involved with it right now as we speak, with using, what is this called? StreamYard. That even though the technology has changed to help reach other people, Bob and Tom is a great example. I write about them as another radio shows that helped amplify stand-up. That when you break it down, the basic act of standing in front of on a stage, trying to get people to laugh at you hasn't really changed that much. The basic idea of one person making a group of people laugh has remained constant from Mark Twain, even pre-Mark Twain, the guy named Artemus Ward and other dudes, through vaudeville, Burt Williams, Will Rogers, Lenny Bruce, right up to, Patton Oswalt and to, John Mulaney, Burr and, Chappelle, all of those guys. So it's interesting that, even though, yes, we may reach people through the computer first, but going out on the road and standing up and making people laugh has not really changed in well over 100 years. It's like 150 years.
It's amazing.
How about that? Is that boring? Is that interesting?
No, that's fascinating. I've always thought that Mark Twain was the first stand-up comic.
That's because you didn't read my book. That's because you didn't read my book.
I haven't read your book. I would love to read your book.
Yeah. No, it's all right. You don't have to read it. Yeah, I could tell you right now. You could save the $11.99, $8.99 Kindle. There was a guy named Artemus Ward who Mark Twain saw and was like, oh my God, that's the funniest guy I ever saw. And then when Mark Twain, believe it or not, lost all his money in this startup, he was like, maybe I could go out on the road like Artemus did. And that's how he started touring. And he had a worldwide tour, India, the whole thing, Hungary, insane.
So how far back can we trace?
Well, there is no first stand-up. There is
somebody. Somebody did it before Artemus Ward, right? Were there
not quite like him? Nobody toured like Artemus Ward before him. Comedians were always part of a show, a circus, a minstrel show, thing like that. But Artemis toured by himself doing a, they weren't called stand-ups, but then they were these humorous lectures.
Right.
And, but it was all laughs. Like it was not, there was nothing serious about it, what he was doing at all. And that was the first one we were like, oh, this can really happen. But there were obviously people doing stand-up in a show. So that goes, you know, and then before that we have, you know, clowns and,
right.
Those, the guys who performed in front of the kings, those guys, court jesters and.
Right.
You know, it even goes back before that. But the real guy who monetized, who made it a business, that was his life. He went on the road and performed town to town in these lecture halls. Artemus Ward is one of the first, certainly the one who inspired Mark Twain.
Wow.
How's that? So,
but there's not a record of something like this existing in ancient times or somewhere.
Yeah, there is.
There
is funny people, but it was more in the context of
it's a variety show.
Like religious rituals and things like that. And like when we got around, you know, around like Mardi Gras is around Lent or something like that. And so there was always like a clowning aspect to it. And then people started putting on face paint, which unfortunately led to blackface, which we now don't do, but we still do all kinds of painted masking, right? So that's right. All pre-Artemus Ward. There were funny guys. Yeah, no question.
Wow,
but usually comedians were considered someone who was like funny in a play. You know, like they were like a funny guy who was in a play, in one of like a Shakespearean play or something like that. But
right. That's great.
Okay. That's the most, I love that kind of compliment. That's great. That's great, Wayne.
No,
What are you thinking? What's going on in that head of yours?
No, I have all the questions. I wasn't sure how far to go with it. But stand up didn't really exist in a broad sense until the going on the road and comedy clubs being a place that you go to see comedy in.
So wait, you're
places.
Saying Lenny Bruce never played a comedy club. Are you saying
no,
he wasn't?
Wait, you didn't let me finish the question.
Okay. Well, you just said comedy club.
No, it's like comedy clubs didn't exist broadly outside of New York and LA until about 81, 82. Then there was this mass explosion of places where you go to see only comedy, not variety acts.
Right. That's pretty close. Yes.
Okay. And that explosion happened within a year or so. You went from no clubs outside of New York, LA, maybe Chicago. And then the next couple of years, there was 100 comedy clubs.
I don't know if they called it the comedy boom. I don't know if you're old enough to remember it or anything like that. But yeah, they called it the comedy boom. And it was basically, yeah, comedy clubs with funny, sometimes just straight up names, Richmond Comedy Club. That, you know, just a simple name like that, to Zanies, Chuckles, Ha-Ha's, you know.
Right.
The Laugh Stop, the Laugh Express. Sure.
The punchline.
By the way, there was, I played something called the Comedy Womb in Miami. I ran into another comic. He goes, you play the Comedy Womb? I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, I did the one in Minnesota. It's like, there's two comedy wombs in the United States. There was a lot of comedy clubs. And that was, yes, that was a change when the whole show was stand-up, as opposed to Lenny Bruce usually worked with had a musician open or work with strippers or a lot or something like that. Like, for example, Mort Saul, he was a comedian out of San Francisco. He would have the Dave Brubeck Quartet, I think maybe Quintet, open for him. So it was usually music and then a stand-up. But now comedians go on the road, they bring a stand-up with them, like you do, your buddies.
Right.
So you're part of it. You're part of this history.
Yeah, I love it. It's a beautiful craft / art.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here?
Do you want me to ask you questions? We can flip this around totally. I'd be happy to do that. What is that poster I'm looking at behind you? What is this?
That's the Acme Comedy 20th anniversary.
Okay, there we go.
Celebration. Yeah, see, there's comedy history for you.
No question. That's Minnesota, right?
Yeah, it's one of the great comedy clubs in
America.
What
year did that club open?
Well, the 20-year anniversary was in 2011, so they opened in under this brand. It was a club prior, but this brand and this title, 1991.
Right.
They've been going for a long, long time. They're still kicking, and it's the same location. Have you worked that club?
Believe it or not, I've never worked Acme. I know. It's just I tend to be more of an in-town LA comedian because I do so much acting and helping on producing all these other things. But I'd love to. I'd love to play Acme.
It's great. When you put together all the things that you give a shit about as a comic, it checks all the boxes. It's like there's a nice hotel that's walkable. Mm-hmm. The walls are stone, and it's kind of got this downstairs cave, low ceiling, cozy, smart crowds, good sound. An owner that gives a shit about the craft.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. The food is great. It's got a real restaurant, not just like jalapeno poppers or whatever. It's pretty dreamy. It's one of those that when you get lost in the wilderness, sometimes as a comic, and then you go do Acme, you're like, oh, I'm good. I'm doing something that's valuable here. It's nice to be reminded.
Maybe I'll try to get a weekend there or something. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good one. All right, I have more questions.
Let's do it.
Head monologue writer for Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
Tell as a comedy, as a fanboy and as a comedy nerd, tell me how that works. How many people are on staff and how many are writing monologue jokes?
For the model, we had two different groups of writers. So we had monologue joke writers and then sketch writers, and there was some in between kind of thing. So we had, this was right when Jimmy Fallon started hosting late night. So he's taken over from Conan. Conan was supposed to take over the Tonight Show. He didn't. Leno, you know, that whole mess.
Right.
So that's when we started, and I had, so what we did is we get topics the night before. These are from the newspapers, AP, Huffington Post, anywhere we get like the setups, they would call them. And we give them to the writers. So maybe they could just something hit them overnight. They'd write them down. And then the morning new ones would come out. We'd write till 11:30 or something. I call those jokes. So, you know, and this is Jeselnik was writing, Morgan Murphy was writing for him, Jeremy Bronson. It was quite a crew of writers. And then I would call those jokes as the head monologue writer, write them a little bit in Jimmy's voice if I could, and then send them to Jimmy. And then Jimmy would look through all of them and go, yes, yes, no, 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 close. And then we'd work on that. Da, da, da. Then we go back, rewrite some of the jokes. More topics would come in. And then I'd put together a set for Jimmy to do in front of a crowd of like tourists. And then he would do the jokes. And then from there, we would decide which ones went into the monologue. We'd see if we even needed more jokes at that point. And then rinse and repeat every day. So it was bit of a Groundhog Day type experience, not perfect for my thing, my sensibility. And we launched that show. I mean, it was really very, very exciting. And after about six or seven months, I was like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. This just feels like I just did this yesterday. Oh, I did do it yesterday and the day before and the day before. So some people love that, love it. I loved it at the beginning and then was like, it felt a little like I was on the subway going to work. I felt like, oh, this feels like I'm going to school. Like I'm getting up in the morning. I'm tired. that kind of thing. Right. And so I did it for a little over a year. And then they brought somebody else, you know, somebody else did it who was more into writing jokes for somebody else. But it was extremely exciting and satisfying. And I would say I was great at the job for those first 7 months. And then I was less great.
All right.
To be totally honest with you, like that's basically how it worked. And I got the job because Jimmy opened for me on the road when he was getting ready to host the show, trying to put together a new hour. And I would write for him. And then eventually we flipped because people were going to see Jimmy Fallon, not Wayne Fetterman. And I was just good. I knew his voice. He's extremely easy to write stand-up for because he can do act outs, impressions, music stuff, you know, personal stories, crowd work. He's super charming. It was very easy to write for him. And that's how I got the job.
That's great. All right, several questions to follow up. So when you say cull, how many jokes are you culling them down from and to?
I guess it depends. Like Bronson would write 15 jokes, like 15 versions of the same joke. And so he would give me, you know, I maybe 50 jokes or something like that. And then Jeselnik was a little less, obviously less than that, maybe 10. And there were some other guys. And then Morgan Murphy would only write like 4 jokes a day, but she got usually 3 of those jokes in. Like she would like really just, she did a lot of my job for me by like, okay, I'm just going to submit jokes that I think are tens.
She did the winnowing. So, yeah. Right.
Yeah. She did all of that for me. So, I don't know. It was just, it was very creative. And let's say, here's an example. Let's say Jimmy didn't like a joke in the morning thing. If a comedian like was like, he's just missing this, let's slightly rewrite it and try to get it in the afternoon. I would do that. I was very collaborative. I was like, who am I? You know? And so we would resubmit jokes and things like that. So it was fun. And then, it was, so I don't know, 100 to get down to walk in with like 25 or 30. And then of those 30, he culled them down to 15 and then we'd add another 10. So we'd have 25 for the run through. And then that would get down to, he liked between like 8 and 11 jokes. So okay.
I've seen Jeselnik discuss this in other interviews and he said he got nothing on. He's exaggerating, but
he is exaggerating, but he was a weird hire for the show. Cause he's he's like a dark comedian and Jimmy Fallon is like not that. So he's
sunshine. Right.
Yeah. You asked Jeselnik, he's wrong. And as a matter of fact, one time I remember there was like nothing that he wrote in the morning, got on. And then in the afternoon, the second session, he got like three jokes on. 3 of the 8 jokes were his new jokes that he wrote. So I don't know if he loved writing that style of joke. It's a specific late night joke writing is a specific, as you know, right?
Yeah. It's very specific.
Yeah. Very specific style, but he was a blast to just hang out with. And I love that we were at the beginning of the show, you know, and that was very appealing to me to launch a show.
That's so cool. That's what a great experience.
Yeah. So where and Lorne Michaels would come down sometimes and he'd pitch you know, it was just wild to be near that whole NBC. And as a comedy nerd, I don't know if you know this, but the big television show that broke television, exploded television in 1948 and 49 was Milton Berle's Texaco Star Theater. And it was done in the same building, the same studio that we did The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon.
Wow. That's totally news to me. Wow.
For me, it was exciting. No one else even cared. Even like, I'm in a whole different world. Yeah.
Where did you run the jokes with tourists? Where is that happening?
Oh, that was on stage. They would have the NBC tours would come by. And then every once in a while, they'd take one of the tours, like, would you like to hear some jokes? And they'd have the tour sit down for 10 minutes.
That's genius.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do that.
That's what great. Is the word for it? Where it's, you know, crowdsourced. It was crowdsourced a little bit. You know, just so Jimmy gets a chance to.
Oh, of course. As a comic, I always think Leno used to go to the Hermosa to run the jokes for the Tonight Show before that, right? On Sunday nights before he guest hosted, right?
Right. But they, again, our jokes, yes, of course. It's better. It would be better in a club, but we have no time for that.
No, but to be able to do that, I mean, that's got to make the whole thing 20% better just from doing that, right?
Yes, just from saying it out loud, A, and from B, you're totally 100% right. This is the first thing you said that's right. And B is that sometimes you would come up with tags and, you know what I mean, little toppers and stuff, just like with the feedback from, you know.
Yeah,
so
you trim out the bottom 10%, you get a tag, you pull this, this is too cumbersome, they didn't quite follow this part, you get to fix it before it's on the thing. It's great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's again, so those were thrilling, and then we put them on cue cards because they read them old school style off of cue cards, and
right.
And then even then there was some editing on the cue cards as we read them through, like right before Jimmy went on. So it was very exciting. Obviously it's not a live show, but it's pretty close to a live show. For the most part, we didn't do much editing.
Right.
Once in a while, I would make a mistake, a factual mistake on the joke, and you have to go back and fix it. But
the future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
One last question. Is it a collegial environment? Is there a weird politics of you being the person who decides what gets culled? And is there any kind of office-y tension?
A little bit. There has to be. And at the beginning, I was trying to do a thing where it didn't matter. I didn't want anyone to know who wrote which joke. You know what I mean? So it was all like a team effort, but that fell apart pretty quick. And eventually the producers wanted to know who was getting jokes on. So the people that weren't, maybe were encouraged to not do, or switch over to sketch or something like that.
Right. You didn't leave it in the same, font or anything.
No. You just put the.
This is clearly a Jeselnik. Yeah, right.
Right. I think you could kind of tell a little bit. But no, it was, I don't know. I mean, I thought I was, again, like I said, I thought I was excellent at the job for about 7 months.
Yeah.
But people do that job for years. Like, you know, that was kind of what Jack Cohen did for Leno for years.
Yeah. Somebody that you're a historian of stand-up, is this true? Somebody told me this, and this has been in my head for years, that in the old days, the stand-up writers, the comics who became writers and did monologue-y late-night style shows a lot, in some ways, that was like a jumping-off point to do the sitcom writing where the big money was. And then when the sitcom sort of faded away and those writing jobs got fewer and fewer and fewer, guys stayed parked at the late night show thing for longer. And so more guys have been in that career for decades that might have gone on to sitcoms in the old days.
Is that true?
Have you found that to be true?
I don't know. I don't know. I do know that, like, I never wanted to be a writer like that. When I started out, I just wanted to do stand up and acting. So I didn't want to be on a sitcom, but some comedians don't like the road and want to raise a family and get, $12,000 a week writing for a sitcom or something like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes, there's less sitcom jobs. So maybe people were there. I mean, obviously that Simpson guys, the guys created Simpson came out of Carson and, Al Jean and those guys. So obviously Conan, I don't know, did he do late night writing or just, he did Saturday Night Live and Simpsons. So Oh, no, that's not true. I think he wrote on, I don't know if he wrote monologue jokes, those, for Wilton North. Didn't he do a little Wilton North? So
I don't know that.
It's a good question. I do know that there were comedians I knew that were like, I'd like to really just write on Mad About You. You know, that would be a dream for mine. And that was never close to being a dream of mine.
Right.
So I guess a late night set could be, because they were looking for, you know, sitcoms are loaded with set up punch within these narrative arcs. I hate to say it.
Right. But
it's, right?
Yeah. And it's something that's hard to be good at. So it seems like good training for that sort of job, if that's what you wanted to do. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right. I want to go back to the same question and ask you, because I'm a huge George Carlin fan, and that doc was just amazing. What surprised you the most in doing the homework on that?
The amount of work George Carlin did, like paper, that the amount of writing he did was, even late in his career, I mean, just file after file of writing. And that by the time he did his specials for HBO, which he did about one every couple of years, it was virtually word for word. Like, you could follow along like it was a play, like it was a script. Like, that's how down he had it. So he often said that he was a writer who performed, as opposed to, that's what he feel like he became, a writer who performed his material, as opposed to a stand-up who might be a little looser with that stuff. But he, you know, that was one of the most thrilling things I've ever been involved with. I don't want to say, I have an Emmy Award for it, but they have, it's, it was just, you know, because I've loved him since, I mean, I didn't know him when he was with his partner, Jack, so I didn't know him then. So, but I knew him from Takeoffs and Put-Ons. Like, I had that out. So, you know, when I was a kid, so I've known him his whole record career. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Burns, I think the guy's name was his first comedy partner. So, you know, and I like Carlin's early stuff. Like, I like the stuff that everyone think dismissed because it's not, I don't know, it doesn't have a political or social bent to it.
Right, right. Stuff, right.
I like the square stuff. I love, you know, obviously to me, the peak Carlin, and this is something I always with Carlin nuts get in arguments with, is I think peak Carlin's 70s when he was on crazy cocaine addict Carlin, like FMAM and Class Clown.
Oh,
and
that wow.
Yeah, I really think those are the drugs bit. Yeah. But people more like, oh, he wasn't talking about the environment or yelling. I like the less yelling Carlin, the more weird hippie guy Carlin, grinding his teeth from the coke.
I disagree. I prefer the later Carlin, but
yeah,
I hear
most
you.
People do. Most
yeah,
people,
I yeah. hear you. Yeah.
Most people do. Another thing I found fascinating, I don't know if it's the most, but is how much he never gave up on the acting dream, because he started out wanting to be an actor. He just thought he was going to do stand up for a little bit, and that was going to be a way to become Danny Kaye and a Jack Lemmon and like a film actor.
That's and so that weird to me that he even cared about that.
Well, he had a real moment on That Girl. I don't know if you're old enough to know that show, but this was a Marlo Thomas show, and he was hired to, you know, he got this little character arc on it. And he hated standing around, hitting the mark, saying the line the same way. He was like, oh, I don't even think I like film acting, you know, and that was a sitcom. And then he did a couple other movies early on. It was like, maybe I'll just stick with the stand-up thing. How crazy is that? To become Scarlet. Yeah. But he had a real, but he still, as much as he didn't like it, he still never gave up on it. He was in movies all the way through. You know,
right.
Bill and Ted's and, you know, that movie with Bette Midler, and obviously Kevin Smith put him in a movie. So it's kind of wild, you know.
That is wild to me. That is interesting that somebody who's so iconic and just a force of nature in the craft that he chose would still be like, well, maybe I do the other thing too. He didn't see it as a tool to improve the stand-up draw. That was an end in its own. he did it.
I think once he got the HBO deal, he was like, this can be a great way to frame my new hour of material every couple of years, put it on HBO. And they also did a ton of Tonight shows. Like, he really did the Tonight Show to promote himself, to keep him out there. So when he played Vegas, when he went on the road and played Cleveland or Detroit or these, you know, we would play kind of these theaters, they would be like, oh, I know who George Carlin is. I saw him on the Tonight with Carson, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's weird to me that he did so much Vegas work. It was one of the great mysteries to me because it's the worst place for him to get a crowd that lets him do what he wants, right?
I know. Well, he had a lot of trouble in Vegas. I mean, besides in the 60s when he, you know, said the word whatever shit on stage or crap or something like that. Yeah, you could say crap but not joke, shit. Right. But in the 90s he got belligerent at the MGM. They canceled him, but he ended up being off the strip a little bit, you know,
He would like go live at Bally's for months in a row and work on his act. Yeah, right?
I know. I agree with you.
People would pay whatever $100 a ticket to come in because they've heard of him and they're from New Hampshire or whatever. It's not the right audience for Carlin.
I know. So he's like, these tourists are coming in and he's like, God is a piece of shit. And he's like, who is this guy?
I went with a comic. I was working at Maxim one time and I went, the other comic vaguely knew him and hooked us up. We went to see him. His last 15 minutes was there's no God. And they hated his guts. They hated him so much. And that was the closing bit. And he just fucking hammered through it and just did the whole thing and said goodnight. And I loved it. And it was just, I think about that sometimes when it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, well, even George Carlin ate it at Bally's when I went, you know, like.
Oh, you saw him at Bally's?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. That's all right.
And it was packed and they hated his guts. It was so interesting.
I know. No, it is interesting that he played Vegas. His last show he ever did as a stand-up was in Las Vegas. The last time he was ever on stage, we have a recording of it. It's amazing. Like, it's just, he's not doing great. You know, he's doing okay, doing some of the old stuff and then trying to develop new things for the special. I wish I could remember the new bit he was working on. And he, I was just like, this is, you know, I wonder if he knew this was the, like, it was so eerie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he at the Orleans? It was at like some, you know, it wasn't at an MGM or Caesars or, you know, any of those big ones.
Right. Well, kudos, man. On that.
Thank you. Thank you. No, it was. And I'm working on another. I'm working on another doc right now not as we speak, but when I get done talking to you.
Oh,
on, stand up, but a comedian filmmaker, Mel Brooks. Melvin Kaminsky is his real name. So
I look forward to that as well.
Thank you.
Carlin one was like chef's kiss, beautiful, so much in it, so much
heart.
Thank you. And I'm a huge Carlin fan, so it would have been, you know, I'm tough to please on something like that. And I was really impressed. It's great work, man.
No, it was, yeah, I love, again, thrilling is the word I would use to work on that doc.
That's so cool. All right. Well, tell us anything else you want to promote. Where can we find you? Where can the common man find Wayne Fetterman?
Well, I'm on Twitter, barely, and Instagram at InstaFetterman and at Fetterman on at Twitter or X, as they call it now. And I'm working on this Mel Brooks documentary. So look for that on a outfit called Home Box Office. Home Box Office.
I hope they make it.
Yeah. I hope they make it. The little startup, Home Box Office. And I just did, it's already aired, but I did it last season, an episode of What We Do in the Shadows, which is on FX. I play a vampire doctor. And
oh, cool.
That's it. I'm trying to think tour, not that much touring dates. I'm doing some in-town stuff. You know, I'm usually at the Improv or Largo here in Los Angeles. And that's how you can hit me in my DMs and Instagram and tell me I was wrong about
I'm just giving you the space.
Right.
That's all.
Oh, yeah, we thought I thought we were going to talk about sports. Is that over?
Well,
is it over?
It is. I have one last question to get us out that's football related, but I wanted to, I'm a comedy nerd and I had all these genuine questions and I love some of the work that you've done and I'm impressed with the arc of your whole story. So I appreciate you doing it, man.
Thank you. Thank you for qualifying some of the work.
I didn't mean that.
Very nice. Very nice of you. Thank you.
I love some of the
work. No, you don't have
to.
I listen.
So you grew up in Virginia and Maryland and Florida?
Maryland before Florida, yes.
And that's how you became Commanders? The Redskins.
The Skins.
The team formerly known as
the Redskins. Yeah. So yes, that's the only, believe it or not, I'm a big sports fan, but that's the only team that I have any allegiance to, but not in a like, I don't even know like who the, I know we got the new quarterback. I wait to the regular season before I start following football. I never bet. I never predict anything like that. But here's a crazy little thing. And the next time I'm on the show, I'll tell you about it. I was a diehard Washington football team, you know, in Silver Spring, Maryland. The whole thing, Sonny Jurgensen, the whole Charlie Taylor, moved to Florida. And who is my next door neighbor in Florida? Larry Zonka of the Miami Dolphins.
What?
Yes. Yeah, so he used to drive me to school. It's like, so what? I know the whole family. Yeah, Pam, his wife, the kids. Yeah, and
that's so
this
random.
This is when football players didn't make a lot of money, by the way. They, you know, and but then they obviously meet each other in the Super Bowl VII. It was out at the Rose Bowl, and so the whole state is all rooting for. The Dolphins, my neighbor, and I'm holding out. I don't believe in changing teams when you move. This is just a weird thing about me.
Yeah.
So I'm still rooting for the Redskins against my neighbor Larry.
All these years in New York and LA, and you're still the Washington team.
I don't believe in it. I don't believe in like suddenly I'm a Rams fan because I live in Los Angeles. Is that what is the rule? Is there a rule for that? Have you come across that before? You spoke to a lot of guys like that.
I too have lived in New York and LA for most of the last 25 years, and I'm a Falcons fan. I hung in there too. I tried to be a Giants fan. I went to a few Giants games with a podcast partner over the years. I've been to a Jets game. I've been to a few Rams games. I try to like the Chargers. I don't know. I don't care about any of those teams. What?
I just put in so many years with the Skins. What am I doing now? Suddenly, it's stupid.
I hear you.
We did win three Super Bowls, so I'm still thrilled about that. Thrilled.
That's great.
Even though it hasn't been since 91. It's been whatever, 34 years or something.
So. I'm looking at the clock. I got to get you out of here.
Okay, let's get out of here.
Let's do one. We do a bunch of segments on here that are sports and football. We'll do one. We'll do one quick one and make you listen to a long jingle, and then I have the question for you. Ready? Don't blow it.
But now it's time for which comes first. Oh, yes, it's time for which comes first. Now tell me, will this happen before that happens? It's time for which comes first.
Which comes first, Wayne Fetterman, a Super Bowl win or a name change for your team?
Another name change? We've had three in the last four years.
There's been some rumors. I'm just asking.
Do you feel like the Commanders is... This is something... Okay. This is the thing you don't know about me. I don't predict or bet or gamble or anything like that. I'm a history guy. If you were like, what came first? You know, Joe Theismann, then I would be able to answer a question.
No, we're predicting here.
Yeah, I'm not in the predicting. I'm more.
So they keep the team name is what you're saying.
I'm saying I don't care about this question, but yes, they keep the team name.
All right.
That's what I'm saying.
Did you like Red Tails? Did you? Why didn't we go with Red Tails? It was such a beautiful story. And it's,
I mean,
the, it's,
I know we got, I know we got to close, but I was happy with Washington Football Club or whatever it was called. Like I was,
that's
like,
the that's the wrong answer, Wayne.
That is
Washington
the no.
Football
that is
team.
Okay. This is where we're going to disagree for the first time over this hour or however long we're doing this.
It's too long, but I hear you.
Yeah, it's too long. I agree. The yeah, I like Washington Football Club because it said, "Oh, there's something weird about this franchise. There's something going on here," and instead of trying to cover it up, they're like, "Oh, I just liked it. I really like way more than the Commanders, right?" The Commanders?
Come on. I don't like Commanders either. But I, when you, when something's new, you don't like it. It's not even fair to judge
no,
it
no,
yet.
No,
one is, could argue.
And you're speaking for yourself. You can say I don't like it when something's new. I like a lot of things that are new, but not.
I
liked Washington Football Club. It was brand new. Brand new, and I liked it.
All right, all right. So thank you for staying late. Thank you for answering all my comedy nerd questions.
I love it. Anytime, man. Brother. Anytime.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you. I was so discombobulated. The last 20 minutes, I got it.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine now.
You sure? Is there an emotional thing going on in your life?
I'm not going to edit it, but I wish I could. All right. Thanks, Wayne Fetterman. Go find this man. Come find me on the road. Kostocki.com has all the details. Join the All-Pro Lines Pick'em League. The confidence pool is awesome. If you've never done a confidence pool, I couldn't recommend it more. The V Foundation is great. Do all the things. We'll talk to you again soon. See you guys.